want for wish for nowhere. My first child splurged inside me. He ate what I ate it all. There never was enough. My milk, my eggs and honey, my hunks of ham and strange things craved. I picked gnats out of the carpet, chewed through the shower curtain, swallowed blood. Baby hungry, baby want. His teeth nicked in my linings. He tore my inner skin, his nails already long and gleaming in the manner of what I used to shave my pits. I would not contain him long. Soon my belly was my body. All my weight belonged to him. I stooped through the apartment courts in my back clenched. I still lived alone in those days. The man who'd helped me make the baby had left to find his way into the television. Specks of skin of sleeves he'd been in other years still lay around me on the air, and as such I'd breathe him in. I pulled his long hair from the sink pipes. I swelled with child until I could not stand, until I could not remember where I was or where I'd been, whenever. I'd find myself on the phone with no one. I'd find my fingers caked with grease and the window open, half hung on the sill to jump. To keep my wits about me, I whispered to the child, certain words called walls of color, thou my vision. Where washed my day with yellow? Ouch, tickled green. Tomorrow, pink. Other terms caused lengthy tones to nestle in my ear, tympanic. Sometimes the ceiling would be caving. Other nights I couldn't see. My hair began to fall out. My face stopped looking like my face. Then, one night I felt something open in me. Then one night I knew. A window. A threshold gunning in my stomach. I felt several things collide. I crawled to the front door and out into the breezeway, where the air stung, where the porch lights had burnt away. The pots of moths still swarmed around them. You could see them strumming on the moon, the scummy husk of their glazed wing skin, the woos. Trees had overgrown the stairs. I cooed, my belly bulging, my hope composed in newborn bone. I might have gone on alone forever. I'm still not sure who took me in. On the table they cut me open. I observed from overhead. I watched them rip a seam straight up my middle. The curdle of my inside spread into the room. Some kind of flesh-held flower. My eyes were open. My skin was white. The doctor supplanted my softer parts with metal. They fixed me with a mask. If there was sound, I could not hear it over the fluorescence. The churn of something in me, bruised, innate. Small raw spots clung among the corners of my phantom vision. I felt a gauze around my head. I kept pulling at it, my short breath shaking. I swam over myself, and from myself, from out of me, came my firstborn, came the boy. There he was. The him. The seedling. I watched him rise up from my gut. I watched in silence, vibrating slightly. I'd wanted so long for something, somewhere. I did not expect to be called back down. The boy was very large. His skin was slick and bright and runny. The doctor strained to lift him out. There was squealing on the air. Back in my body, I saw ultraviolet. The room's girders trembled. The gum. The walls folded and unfolded. I could not taste my tongue. The baby measured longer than a machete. His massive skull, ruined fruit. His chest and belly were splotched with something. His head of hair, blonde like father's, grew over his ears across his cheeks. It had spread over his eyelids. I could see him. He could not see me. They took him somewhere else to clean him. I heard a whisper in my ear. I watched, half spinning, while they sewed me up, a long rosebud in my gut, matching the one I had inside me. I could still feel the gap from where the boy had been. I waited for him there inside my arms. They did not bring him. They did not bring him. I screamed a sermon at the roof. I screamed for him to appear before me, for what I needed in the itch. I suffered such a long stretch of expectation curdled in my yearning. The years and years of days unraveled. Everything at once seemed far away, far and cold and small and wilting. Please, I stuttered, scumming. Please me. They hushed and shushed, and there patted. They shoveled applesauce into my mouth. I spat the pap back at them, out onto my bib, all dizzy. The lights went in and out around. I continued, "Where's my baby? What's the number? Press him to me." The answer sprang back from within. "You are not ready. The time is never. He won't live." And overhead, the flicker, day, then night, day, night. Some evenings later, I took the child home in a sack provided by the state. He could not yet be exposed to sunlight, considering the sky, scratched and black and bumpy. I hadn't seen a bird in weeks. The air was full and smelled of burning, and in some winds seemed to speak. With the child, the state had sent a pamphlet of instructional directives. The list weighed 27 pounds. I memorized the key points in my downtime. A loud and sing-song, a dream hymn. There are holes in every home. Consider the effect of certain light in around against the child and or its skin. If you become tired, someone is always awake somewhere. Rest well. Try to smile. Effective punishments of rash behavior in the infant may include threat of hair loss, short confinement, gravel picnic, bad percussion, systematic slurring of education, heavy bath. Sometimes to invoke power, Pretend the child is not quite there. Sometimes put the child's eyes to your eyes. Despite whatever medication they'd injected or what creams I might apply, the child's skin kept mostly mottled. His rind was thick and multicolored, prone to sore. He often oozed. He smelled of cabbage. He was in there still, I knew. I had to peel his lids to see his pupils spinning, neon yellow, again like father's. He seemed easy in his body. He came up to my waist. At 6 days old, he ate two-fisted from the fridge. I could not keep anything slick or sweet around. He ate the meat before I cooked it. He drank the soup straight out of cans. Burp and laugh with his whole body. His genitals were shriveled and oddly colored. His fingerprints were hauled. On okay afternoons, he went walking through the forest that had choked the half backyard. The trees were gnarled and beat and bare of leaves. Save for in spots so high above us we couldn't see, in which case the blooms of mold became a canopy. There had been a stream here somewhere once, whose nightly murmuration sent me somewhat sleeping. But now it had evaporated or sunk to mud. The yard as well was strewn with garbage. There were never any men. We ran neon tape behind us to mark the way. We walked into the fold. I showed him where I'd laughed once and said what had been there then. The dirt often seemed to breathe. At the white warped bow of land, burnt by lightning, ripped wide open, slick with mud, I told my huge son of the house we'd had there when I was his age. Before the running. Before the rape. At the rays of black rock damming the river dry, I described the days I'd gone swimming with my brother, the water level just above our stomachs, the current ever begging to take us down. I did not tell him what I would have done differently, had I known then. We glimpsed the charred belly, where the sun rose sometimes, and the bulb of maggots over McDonald's, and the crisp crust of something unknown on the cold sand, where I and his father had dug our dinner. I tried not to speak ill of that sore man. That absence. I tried not to let on my vehemence. I spoke in rhyme and benediction. I kept any anger hidden, scrunched to a tight pellet in my stomach, seamed with heat. Mostly through all my talking, the boy blinked and cawed and chewed his lip. Sometimes he'd respond in giggles, grunting, sinking his teeth into his bone. Whether he understood or not, it didn't matter. My words were seeping in. They'd spread his flesh and find a holster. He'd look back one day and understand. out make his world somewhere to rest in. He'd remember. We would not grow old alone. As weeks got worse, the earth's plates snapping, the flies at the windows cracking the glass, the stitch of rhythm in the incision of the earth sinking in itself, my boy continued to grow faster. I could not sew fast enough to clothe him. He would stretch a pair of pants in several days. In his large hands, I saw the wrinkles of other ways that I had known. Soon, he was a man. Already, he was grown so large I couldn't fit him in my arms. I called him different names for each occasion. He responded to all of them. It was cold in the apartment. The heater mostly did not work. We could see our breath in long shapes crystallizing. The freeze air made him violent. He unstuffed the sofa and ruined my magazines. He took the heads of all his dolls. Such a busy child, so eager. He didn't mean to bruise my face. He only wanted, like me, something he could hold a certain way. In the evenings, once he'd grown worn out, the apartment again reduced to shambles, I put my hours towards attempting to teach him how to speak. He'd already proved a want for learning. He liked to watch my tapes of old TV. I'd spent hundreds cataloguing my favorite programs back when the broadcasts were still on air. The answers and storylines of which I could not at all remember. The people in those pictures seemed very different from people now. Their eyes were slightly wider. Their skin offered a sheen. My son could somehow see them through his barbed hair, which no matter how quickly I cut it from him, would grow back straight and further black. In the newsreel I had acquired, letting the VCR spool on through the night, I let my baby witness the swan dive of our destruction as arrayed in mini clips. The anchors with their powdered jowls and immoderate narration. The chapped condition of their smiling as they spoke out the way the world had come to rash. And how the ground would split apart and spit up blobs of black and ooze and stinking, and the missionaries with their long tongues, and the steaming craters of the moon, and the pastures of dead cattle already rotten within hours, the beetles and the fungus spreading over, the mayonnaise on a sandwich no one would ever eat, and the babies with their hair tongues, like my baby here, like mine. More than the programs, my boy liked advertisements. He liked to hiss or sing along in faction. At first I'd fast forward through those sent from late night, the 1-800 numbers with women moaning. But then I began to find that in those moments he seemed most pleased. Most still and God blessed. And so I let him go on watching. While outside the tides broke and swallowed cars, and on the beaches the bloated continued rolling in, rotting even in the sun's absence, clogged and ripped and lined with tumor. These were other days, these ones prepared for us. In these new days we no longer had to watch the mobs of wrecked men with their machine guns, 10,000 piled up on sheets of concrete, the splintered knob of bone so hushed, the scum caked and ever-growing, and all those thoughts of what for which I'd never get the time. The words I could not somehow pass to baby,
I'd wheel the ball and call its name, coo it cutely for my young one, B-A-L-L. And he'd shriek back, ka-keesh. I'd put a finger to my forehead and say, mummy. And my child, taller than me, went, pow-oo, pow-ee. Stubborn, like his father, with the straight white teeth to match. The things I knew he'd never be. There was something ever coming, I said inside me, and it doesn't have a name. At night I locked the front door and watched for hours through the peep. I locked the door that blocked the hallway and the one leading to my room. So many doors, forever. There never were enough. Each door had several locks. One lock was combination. Another required keys. Another was simple slide latch. Another was strictly ornamental. Another you could open by whispering the right thing to it at the right time. Which is the type of lock most humans have.